Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Cobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
Stanford University, it was the third or fourth week of camp. We were about where teams are right now, right before the season. Everybody's pissing and moaning. We had a different coach come up and give a motivational speech in the afternoon each day. He was our running backs coach at the time by the name of Derek Foster. Coach Foster came up there, toughness and pushing through. He got real razzed up as his speech progressed. We had a video coordinator named Rocky. He finishes his speech. And he goes, "Hit it, Rock!" And set it all by Boosie Badass played. As a young white man, it was my first time hearing that song, Set It Off. Yeah, we finna set it off, you heard me? I'm finna put you in the trash bag. Tired of all these knowing me right now, for real. You wanna talk shit? You wanna run your mouth? You want some gangster strut your motherfucking house? We are set this job. Yeah. And that was my first time hearing Set It Off. At Stanford University, it was the third or fourth week of camp. We were about where teams are right now. Right before the season, everybody's pissing and moaning. We had a different coach come up and give a motivational speech in the afternoon each day. He was our running backs coach at the time by the name of Derek Foster. Coach Foster came up there, toughness and pushing through. He got real razzed up as his speech progressed. We had a video coordinator named
What It Is, What It Ain't. Oh no. Is our sound pad not working? Yeah. Our sound pad ain't working today. Well, that's part of not having a production crew. What up? What it is, baby? This is In the Jar, I believe, episode 88. I'm going to have to do a cold intro here today to make sure that we're on our shit. And I just realized I might need to plug my computer in as well. But that's okay. I need to hit record. Need to get our shit together. You know what I'm saying? It's time to strap in, boys. We got a lot to talk about today. A lot to talk about. We had the Jaguars beat the Chiefs last night on Monday Night Football. And the headline of today's show, and we'll probably spend the majority of the show unpacking, is the Bengals have traded for Joe Flacco. The Cincinnati Bengals, who on Sunday said, "We're going to evaluate our options going forward at quarterback, and we're going to have it sorted out by Wednesday." They hold true to their word, and they sign veteran Super Bowl winning quarterback Joe Flacco to the squad. I'm not sure how I feel about it yet. There's part of me that's really excited. There's part of me that's really hopeful. There's part of me that's really optimistic. But then there's part of me that is a bit cynical about this whole thing. Apparently, the Bengals didn't even make any calls to the New York Giants about Jameis Winston or Russell Wilson. A lot of people were upset about that on Bengals Twitter today. Look, I don't know if there were any better options. Jameis Winston you could argue for, but you got to think that the asking price for someone like Jameis Winston would be a lot more than what the Bengals gave up. The Bengals give up a late fifth-round pick. They get Joe Flacco back, and they get a sixth-round pick with that. So they move back about 40 picks in the draft to get a quarterback that'll hopefully revitalize the entire hopes of this organization. Let's face it, the AFC is wide open this year. The AFC North is even farther wide open. It's now or never for Cincinnati. It is now or never. And if you look at it closely, if you look at this trade closely, you'll see that the Bengals must have a lot of faith that Joe Burrow will make it back if this team is able to be in playoff contention. I think that's all this trade says. Because if they had, and look, they might not have any choice to have faith. They might be, the Bengals might fully understand. I got to get my hair out of the way here. The Bengals might understand that the errors, the dysfunction of the front office is finally starting to come to light. We've all known this. If you're a Cincinnati Bengals homer like me, we've all known that this front office has been dysfunctional for a long time. But I feel like it's all started to come to light in the last 12 months. It's all started to come to life. You've got a quarterback last season in Burrow who has an MVP caliber year, and you miss the playoffs. I think that's when it started to come to light, the great noticing, if you will, of the incompetence of this Bengals front office. I'm not talking about just the city of Cincinnati. The city of Cincinnati has known this forever. I'm talking about the bigger mass media and the nation as a whole has started to notice that this Bengals organization is dysfunctional. Now let's look at the facts of the situation. The Bengals have failed to address the offensive line for years and years and years. Andrew Whitworth went on Pat McAfee yesterday and brought the fact to light that the Bengals since 2011 have not drafted an offensive lineman that earned a second contract. I see a front office that would rather have a shiny, flashy Lamborghini in the garage that doesn't run sometimes, doesn't get you to point A to point B sometimes, which is literally the only job of a car. Okay, the Bengals front office would rather have a shiny Lambo that doesn't run sometimes in the garage than a beat up Toyota Camry that'll run for decades and decades and decades. Now let's look at the pros of this Joe Flacco signing. Let's unpack this, okay? The pros. He's a consummate professional. He'll be able to pick up the playbook in days. They're planning to start him on Sunday against Green Bay, who he's already beaten a couple weeks ago with Cleveland. You've got a guy who, from what I understand, is the first Super Bowl winning quarterback to ever start in Cincinnati. You've got a guy that will come in and revitalize this locker room, revitalize this facility, revitalize this fan base, at least for the time being. I think one of the last straws for the Brown family, for Kenny Blackburn, was seeing all that blue in Paycor Stadium on Sunday. It was embarrassing. And a lot of the stat merchants are coming out of the woodwork this morning, this afternoon,
saying that out of 33 rated quarterbacks, it was either, dude, all these stat merchants, they love to bring up EPA, which is expected points or something per play. And they love to bring up quarterback rating. They'll always use those numbers before they just turn on the film and realize that Jake Browning is making horrible decisions with the football. I'm still embarrassed about that take, by the way, on the show a couple weeks ago where I said Jake Browning was going to be the next Nick Foles and lead this team to your Super Bowl. I'm going to stand on business. I'm not going to delete the tweets. I'm not going to delete the clips. I'm not going to do that. It's the worst take I've ever made in my young, what do you call this, sports journalism, podcasting career. It's the worst take I've ever made, saying that Jake Browning had what it took. And I'll stand on business. I'll be a man. I'll take accountability for that. But there are some stat merchants online right now who are saying out of 33 rated quarterbacks, excuse me, Jake Browning is number 33. It's either EPA or quarterback rating. This shit's all the same to me. It's all ambiguous. It's all a bunch of nerd speak for guys that don't really understand the game, don't really watch film. Okay, that's my main grievance. Jake Browning, though, number 33 on this list. Joe Flacco, number 32 on this list. So every stat merchant, and I don't know how I feel about this move yet. I'll know how I feel after I watch this offense on Sunday. Okay, but the knock is that Joe Flacco statistically has not been much more productive than Jake Browning this season. He's thrown 6 interceptions. I saw 2 interceptions that Joe Flacco threw that were dropped balls by receivers, tipped up in the air, and picked. The cons of this situation. We've got a bottom 5 offensive line protecting a statue, an old guy, right? You can't expect... I feel like this move, it's exciting. It's invigorating for the franchise. It's invigorating for the fans. It inspires hope. And there is a chance that we could get ourselves with this AFC, North, in contention to maybe grab a playoff spot. I know early playoff picture, the Bengals are outside looking in. They're in that 8th spot, and I think New England is in that 7th wild card spot in the playoffs right now. It's wide open in the AFC. I think Baltimore's mailing it in. They just traded their defensive end. I can't pronounce his name. Some African name, Owe. They trade him to the Chargers. And also, before I forget, as an implication of this trade, Shedeur Sanders is now the backup in Cleveland and will definitely have a chance to secure that starting role in Cleveland. So apologies to Shedeur Sanders. If you guys follow the show, if you've been watching the show, I had an episode last week where I reacted to Lamar going down. And I said if Shedeur just kept his mouth shut and let Baltimore draft him, he'd have a chance to be starting right now. But it looks like there's such a circus going on in Cleveland that he will still have a chance to start. And so I kind of have to eat my words with this Joe Flacco trade. As much as I'm excited for my own selfish benefit, being a Bengals fan, I have to eat my words on that Shedeur Sanders take. It seems like he will get a chance to play at some point in Cleveland, and I'm going to have to eat my words saying that he made the wrong decision. It seems like he would have played either way in a league that's largely been injury-plagued the first 5 weeks of the season. You got one of the worst years, if you care about fantasy football, you got one of the worst years in memorable history in terms of key guys getting injured, getting hurt on these teams. Omarion Hampton
the rookie star running back for L.A. Chargers. He's out. The Chargers went and added Nyheim Hines to the practice squad this morning. I would argue he'd get a chance to play. Nyheim Hines has become largely irrelevant, but the reason he's significant to me is he was one of our feature backs in Indianapolis when I was there in 2019. Always wondered what the hell happened to him. He's a great player. A little undersized, but great player nonetheless. Jackknife in an offense. Great returner as well. Chargers added him to the practice squad this morning. So there's a lot of implications around this Joe Flacco move today. I'm erring towards excited. I'm erring towards 60% optimistic about this trade, 40% pessimistic. Because like I mentioned earlier, Joe Flacco is a statue sitting back in the pocket. This offensive line is going to have to create clean pockets. It will not matter if Joe Flacco's getting his ass lit up back there and he ends up hurt sitting right next to Joe Burrow. Now, we all knew this, and this was part of all of our frustration as Bengals fans for the last couple weeks since Joe went down, is that we were frustrated because we knew.
With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
There are quarterbacks out there that could put on a better product and facilitate a better offense than Jake Browning. And we knew that. And this is why we were frustrated that the Bengals would really only have to give up next to nothing to get a guy like Jameis Winston, a guy like Russell Wilson. In true Bengals fashion, they did what we least expected them to do and bring on Flacco this morning. I was having a – I don't want to frame this the wrong way. So I'm addicted to social media. I love it. I enjoy it very much. I have to lock myself out of it every morning to be productive. And so I was locked out of it since probably 6 p.m. last night. Woke up, got my morning routine knocked out, did all this stuff, was feeling real productive. And it's not to say that it hadn't been a productive day. But I was having conscious thoughts, being like, God, I feel good this morning. I'm going to stay off social media today. I'm going to go 24 hours. Maybe I'll go 48. I've gone 72 before without social media. I don't need this shit. I feel great. And then I got the alert from the NFL app that the Bengals signed Joe Flacco, the original Joe Cool. And I said, God damn it, I got to get on Twitter. I said, God damn it. And I went straight to a Bengals space. Jordan Battle's brother was on there. He's a very vocal Bengals guy on Twitter these days, Jalen Battle. And these guys are kind of tossing around everything I'm tossing around right now. It was a great primer for today's episode. I feel like we could talk about this for the entire episode. And we might. And we will. No, I'm just kidding. We are going to cover the Chiefs-Jags game. But other than that, I mean, not a lot of juice. You know, Texas has got Oklahoma this week. Former number one in America, Texas, now unranked, playing Oklahoma. John Mateer will be out for that game. Alabama's got a, don't let me detour too much, you guys, but Alabama's got a big test, I believe, on the road at Mizzou, 14 Mizzou versus 8 Bama this week. cream of the crop to me looks like Ohio State and Miami in college football right now. Pains me because it's two non-SEC schools. I think Miami should be an SEC school. So anyway, chatting shit about the Joe Flacco trade, man. It blows my mind. He's getting every single, you know, if you're a freaking Avengers fan or whatever, people are saying he's getting every single Infinity Stone in the AFC North. And one thing that stood out to me about this trade that I'm looking on Twitter for is fan sentiment around these moves. We obviously always got to look at the film and say, trying to fix this anyway. We always got to look at the film and make deductions for ourselves, but I do think that fan sentiment is not a bad indicator of whether a move like this is good or bad. And one thing I noticed on Twitter was that fans of other organizations were not happy about this Joe Flacco move, which tells me that this might work out. You watched Pat McAfee earlier. They were able to break that news live on their show. And you got a Packers fan in Ty Schmidt saying that he wasn't happy that the Packers, that his Packers were going to have to face Joe Flacco again this week. And it is confirmed that he will play on Sunday. He will start for the Bengals on Sunday against Green Bay. And then we go right into a short week. A Thursday night game against Pittsburgh, a whiteout, a game that could actually have huge implications on the AFC North picture. It's a very weak AFC North right now. It's a very battered AFC North right now. Every starting quarterback in the AFC North has looked different in week five than they did in week one, other than Aaron Rodgers and the Pittsburgh Steelers. I can't think that Pittsburgh Steelers fans liked seeing this morning either. So you think about the offensive line. You think about the stats, the quarterback rating, the EPA, the interceptions. Think about all these negative things. And then on the positive side, obviously, it's more intangible. You get a guy who's been there before. You get a guy who's won a Super Bowl before, albeit an old guy that's won a Super Bowl before. You get him for next to nothing. Browns fans are pissed off about it. Browns fans are mad because just weeks ago, Kevin Stefanski was saying about Flacco, this is our guy, this is who we're going with. And then on the other side of that, Bengals fans are saying, well, why do we want a guy that Cleveland just benched? And then the counter argument to that is, well, Cleveland drafted two quarterbacks. They got two rookie quarterbacks that they want to try out. They want to evaluate. They want to get some film on them. And the Browns fans are upset because they feel like they gave up Flacco for next to nothing. So that tells me that this is not a bad trade on Cincinnati's part if the fans of the opposing team are upset because they feel like they got taken advantage of. That's how it should be. So we gotta just – I am now excited for the Bengals game on Sunday. I don't know if I'm expecting for us to win. We have to make sure – as Bengals fans, that we not tamper our expectations. Maybe that's not the right word. We set our expectations properly. I'm not sure. I've been having a lot of discourse with Bengals fans on Twitter today. It's a cheap way for me to say that we have to watch the games to see how this is going to unfold. But looking at the way this offense is played, you can't get any worse than how Jake Browning's been facilitating this offense. You just can't. You look at his decision-making on Sunday against Detroit. it's very clear the guy is looking at the receiver that he's going to throw to before the snap. It's very clear that he's not making the right reads. He's not checking it down when he needs to. He's not hitting that under route when he needs to. He's trying to take too many shots. He's trying to compensate. So I'm not listening to any of the stats. I'm not listening to any of the statistical comparisons between Flacco and Browning. For better or for worse, I'm not listening to him. Because if you turn on the film, it's very clear that there's going to be a big, objectively, there's going to be a big decision-making upgrade from Browning to Flacco. And then you think about the weapons that Flacco's got at his disposal. People are pissed off because we've got literally the best receiver in the league who hasn't given much production, probably not to his own fault. Got to have a guy that'll just, look, if we can just, here's the keys to success, and this might be a little vague, but if Joe Flacco can simply manage this offense and distribute the ball and be a facilitator, be a field general like he has been in the past, you might see these Bengals in playoff contention down the stretch. I'm very wary about saying things like that. I'm very wary about making takes like that because of my Jake Browning take a couple weeks ago. I was coping. I was very clearly coping. It was a bad take. And so I don't want to stick my neck out for this organization again and then have another horrible take on our hands, another disgusting clip on our hands that I put on TikTok or wherever else. But it can't get any worse. It truly, offensively can't get any worse. And we finally have a defense that doesn't look good, but they look better than they did last year. And anything above the defense last year is, in my opinion, a window for Burrow to take us all the way. And so if you could just get Flacco in there, and you could just get him facilitating things to where our defense can get sacks, they can force turnovers, and just be in games. I'm confident in a guy that's been there before. I'm really hesitant to say all that. Just the way this organization's let us down before. And you look at the Bengals' schedule. They've got a pretty cushy schedule down the stretch. You got Green Bay this week, which I don't know if Green Bay is a team we thought they were, first of all. And that's not a bias. That statement's not clouded by bias. You know, you watch them tie the Cowboys on Sunday Night Football. It looked like they couldn't stop anything against Dallas, who is missing CeeDee Lamb with a high ankle sprain. I think with Green Bay, you saw a lot of really exotic fronts that they were able to use. They've got some dynamic players on that defense, and they had a lot of exotic fronts that they were throwing everybody off with the first couple weeks, but it's NFL. And I think you're starting to see, just kind of like in baseball, where a pitcher that's throwing it 105 miles an hour might shake up some guys at first, but then they're pro baseball players and they end up being able to connect regardless of the speed once they get used to it. I think that's what you're seeing going on with the Green Bay Packers defense. Now that other teams in the league have gotten some film on the different fronts they use, different stunts they use with their defense, everything's kind of leveling out. And I don't think Jordan Love is elite. Again, I really hope that
because the Packers have the Bengals this week, that these statements aren't coming across as clouded by bias. I want to see the Bengals succeed. I want to see them so bad. And in fact, I was chatting with some fans on Twitter today who, let's just say, they've been pretty apologetic on behalf of the organization. They stick up for the organization. Dare I say they shill for the organization. No matter what the Bengals do, they can't do any wrong. I don't agree with that perspective. But what I will say is I never want to appear as if I don't want this organization to thrive. The city of Cincinnati deserves a good product on the field. The fans are great. They're loyal to a fault. And they rally around these teams. So we'll see how it plays out. If we can just be, where are we at, 2-3 right now? If we can be 5-4 going into week 10, God forbid 6-3. Oh my God, that sounds delusional. Just off of one player too, but the most important position in football, pro football especially, is the quarterback. I fear that this trade might just be putting lipstick on a pig. Because like I said at the beginning of the show today, the Bengals have miserably failed to address the fundamental aspects of the game. I've been saying this since week one. Our offensive line gets bullied. Orlando Brown is terrible. Ted Karras is terrible right now. They're just getting bullied. And I was vouching for Amarius Mims for the first couple weeks of the season. I thought he looked great. In the last couple games, he's completely regressed. There's a guy that they've been putting in there, giving him some reps. His name's Rivers, maybe Jalen Rivers or something. And he hadn't played half bad. But it seems like whenever a Bengals lineman puts together a good couple weeks, that they inevitably regress for some reason. I think the Bengals offensive line coach, Scott Peters, has largely been an experiment. And we also found out that Zach Taylor will not be relieving play calling duties to somebody else. Brian Callahan did it in Tennessee. And guess what? They squeak out a win 20 minutes from where I sit in Glendale, Arizona this past Sunday. So the problems with the Bengals obviously go a lot deeper than the quarterback position. But if you can find a way to just put a Band-Aid on this thing until Burrow comes back and inevitably elevates everyone around him like the special player he is, all of a sudden there's hope again for Cincinnati. All of a sudden. Last night we had the Chiefs losing in Jacksonville to the Jaguars. Is the Chiefs dynasty over? I thought it'd be a cold day in hell before you'd hear me or anybody else in sports media saying that both Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes in their prime, arguably, both of their teams are at risk of missing the playoffs in week, we're coming up on week six. Both teams are at risk of missing the playoffs. This is a hot take, but I still feel like the Jacksonville Jaguars at 4-1 are at risk of missing the postseason as long as Indianapolis continues the level of play that they're at. And then the Houston Texans as well. I mean, they're behind the Jags in the AFC South right now. But I think last night was a great game, first of all. But I think both of these teams that you saw play last night on Monday Night Football were and are at risk of missing the postseason. Now,
You can't underestimate Patrick Mahomes' achievements. You can't underestimate that these guys, Andy Reid, Steve Spagnuolo, have not been there before and done that before. They have. But they're at risk, man. The Broncos look strong coming off a win against Philly. And I think it's going to be neck and neck down the stretch who takes AFC West between Kansas City and Denver. If Denver doesn't run away with it, I don't think they will. I think Kansas City, like I said, they've been there and done that. And most of the time, football teams with guys that have been there and done that, like Kansas City, end up figuring it out and finding a way to put themselves in a position to win week out. That's what the Chiefs have been so good at over the years, is not making mistakes that defeat themselves, unlike the Bengals. But they did a lot of that last night. Chiefs outgained Jacksonville by 157 yards last night. But they had 13 penalties for 109 yards. They had special teams mishaps. They kick it out of the zone on the last drive of the game to put Jacksonville on the 40 with a minute and a half left and a couple timeouts. They roughed the punter on one series, which led to a first down for Jacksonville and eventually 3 points, which ended up being the difference in the game. I probably said this quote 100 times on the show already, but I had a head coach in college whose main spiel every single week was, you never know what play is going to be the most important play until after the game. And that roughing the punter penalty, look, you don't do that. You save yourself 3 points. All of a sudden, it's 28-28, even with that Trevor Lawrence stumbling, fumbling, getting back up and scoring touchdown. I do think the Chiefs' offense is getting a bit better. I think they're figuring it out. They just don't have a clear wide receiver one. They got a bunch of great receivers. They got Hollywood Brown. He made a couple nice catches last night. They got Xavier Worthy, who, you know, he's a great player out of the slot, but you can't really depend on him to go up and get 50-50 balls just due to his size. And then you got Kelce, who might be focused on other things at this point in his career. I don't know if football is the main thing for old Travis Kelce anymore, and why would it be? So I do think the Chiefs are getting a bit better on offense. Chris Jones, if you saw that Trevor Lawrence fall down play, touchdown that ended up winning it for Jacksonville, Chris Jones had a terrible rep on that play. Half-assed, loaf effort. That's not something that you're used to seeing from an all-pro level guy, potential future Hall of Famer guy like Chris Jones, number 95 down there for Kansas City. Both QBs, too, were the leading rushers for their teams. Trevor Lawrence did look like Trevor Jackson, though, last night, dude. He was running around. I didn't know he had that shit in him, man. Running around, making first downs. He wasn't sliding either. He was taking hits, but it seemed like he wasn't taking brutal hits. He was kind of finessing his body in a way where he was still protecting himself, even though he wasn't sliding. Mahomes was the leading rusher for Kansas City. The fall off of Isaiah Pacheco needs to be studied. Kareem Hunt seemed to be their guy the whole way last night. So like I said, I think Kansas City and Jacksonville, even Jacksonville sitting at 4-1, are both at risk of missing the playoffs. Travis Hunter played a lot on both sides of the ball last night. 39 offensive snaps, 25 defensive snaps. So they're starting to get him involved in the scheme a little bit. But guess what, man? You look at the post-game speech by Liam Cohen in the Jacksonville Jaguars locker room last night. You look at how excited these guys are. You look at how invigorated the culture of this organization seems to be, which, to me, the Jacksonville Jaguars have always been kind of a perpetual laughingstock of the league. Even when they were great, back in like 2017 when Bobby Bortles, yes, his name's Bobby to me, took them to the AFC Championship and they had those two-tone helmets. They had it was either gold in front, black in back, or black in front, gold and black. I can't remember. Those helmets were brutal back when they had Jalen Ramsey. Even then, it was hard for everybody to take the Jaguars serious. And I feel like that narrative might be shifting. And it's all because The Jags cleaned house this offseason. They cleaned house, and it totally has invigorated the Jacksonville Jaguars organization. You got to do it right. You can't just clean house without a plan. But I feel like the Jags did a good job of that. On Sunday, I forgot to talk about this yesterday, so I figured I'd bring it up. Cardinals played the Titans, and you had DeMarcado, a running back for the Cardinals. I remember watching him, by the way, when he was at TCU. Great back, great player. He's obviously made a career for himself in the NFL with the Cardinals. Let's go with the football early. You saw Adonai Mitchell make this mistake for Indy against the Chargers last week, week before last, I guess now. And you see the coach of the Arizona Cardinals, Gannon, having a little talk with DeMarcado after he let the ball go early to fumble out of the back of the end zone for a touchdown, changed the whole game. And Gannon kind of gives him a stern talking to, and then gives him a stern pat on the shoulder pads or whatever. Some people might say he, you know, popped him. And Gannon actually today had to come out and apologize for this. I say bullshit. When did we forget that a major aspect of football is hard coaching? When did we forget? I know hard coaching changed my life for the better. When did we go soft? It's not like Gannon slapped him in the face or something, which I'm sure thousands and thousands of coaches have done to players when cameras weren't on over the years, even when cameras were on, maybe back in a grittier time. Why is Gannon apologizing? I know the answer. All these business folks that run this league that don't understand the nature of the game of football in the name of opportunity, right? I'm talking to women who should... Frankly, I love women. Stay the hell away from my game. Stay away. Because these are the exact kind of people that are showing up to Jonathan Gannon's doorstep in his office and saying, well, that wasn't really a good look. You should really apologize for hitting him on the pad so hard. Stay away from my game. You've never played before. And I'm talking to the male business executives, too, that didn't go past eighth grade ball. Stay away. You don't understand. The sensitivity just blows my mind, brother. Absolutely blows my mind. So we'll see what happens this week. A little bit of a shorter podcast. Frankly, I'm out of stuff to talk about. So I will let you guys know about stuff. You know what I mean? I'm just taking a look at the chat here. Somebody said Flacco still got it. What you think it would have taken to trade for Shadur, you know, I never would have even thought of that if you're the Bengals. You know, if you're thinking about trading Shadur or trading for Shadur, you got to call the New York Giants first and see what the price is for Jameis or Russ Wilson. I don't think Russ Wilson would have been a fit in Cincinnati. Frankly, if you look at all the guys like Marshawn Lynch, or any of the Legion of Boom guys, all those guys that played with Russ in Seattle over those years, none of those guys retroactively have anything good to say about Russell Wilson. And I think a hallmark aspect of a player's reputation is what you're former teammates say about you. And I've never heard any former teammate of Russell Wilson say good things about him. I think he's more of a politician, if you really want me to be frank. He wears that Walter Payton badge on his shirt. You know, I think a guy like Russell Wilson is more concerned about looking good to others than actually being a good teammate. Again, I've never met Russell Wilson. I've been in an NFL facility, but I've never been on an NFL team as a player. I just enjoy weighing in on this stuff. So everything I say there, I do not know to be fact about Russell Wilson. I just go based off of the facts I see. And when you hear Marshawn Lynch talk about Russell Wilson, calling him from block numbers, all this stuff, like, it just kind of seems like a weird kind of teammate to have. Yeah, and then Kingston says, you think Joe Flacco will help out? He's thrown 2 touchdowns and 6 picks. I know, Kingston. And look, I don't want bias to cloud anything I'm saying, but it inherently will because this is about the Bengals. I've seen at least 2 interceptions thrown by Joe Flacco this season that were good balls, dropped by the receivers, and tipped up for interceptions. And I guarantee you, Jake Browning's thrown more than 6 picks already. So we got to set our expectations the right way. But I think that with the AFC, as wide open as it is, with the AFC North even wider open right now, that if Joe Flacco can just facilitate this offense, get Jamar the ball, get T the ball. These are the best receivers that Joe Flacco's probably ever had in his career, too, by the way. It's probably not even close. And you have a relatively easy schedule down the stretch for Cincinnati. They'll have Buffalo late in the year. But everybody else, man, everybody else on that schedule, Pittsburgh's obviously a good team, but division game nonetheless. This AFC North's wide open. This AFC in general is wide open. It's never been a year where it's been more wide open that I can remember. If he can just get the Bengals in a spot to even entertain Joe Burrow coming back. And I think I mentioned this earlier, but I want to reiterate this. I think this move indicates 2 things. Number one, the Bengals front office knows that the dysfunction is coming to light and they need to win now. Okay, that's the first thing. The second thing, so some of you guys might not like this. The second thing is, this tells me that there's a big chance that Joe Burrow's on schedule to come back. There's a big chance that Joe Burrow, and he's that man, look, say what you want. I know I got a Bills fan in the chat here and a Cubs fan. Damn, dude, that's like double sin. I don't mind Buffalo, by the way. Oh, Cubs fans, ew. Dude, my Reds, we didn't even look like we belonged there in the playoffs. We just squeaked in, man. Broke my heart watching them get their ass kicked by the Dodgers like they did. I'm not even watching baseball. I don't care about baseball if the Reds aren't involved. And most of the time, we aren't. So, what was I saying? I truly believe that a guy like Joe Burrow, psychopath, serial killer, low blood pressure, regardless of the scenario, guy like Joe Burrow could be the guy to make it back from this injury. But we just have to, the Bengals just have to be in contention to make that push to get Joe back sensible, right? It's not sensible to put Joe back out there if we're freaking, you know, 4-10 going into week 15. It's not sensible. I don't think the Bengals with Jake Browning at quarterback would have even sniffed 3 wins. But if you can get shit, man, let's think. And my Mac's low on battery. I want to wrap the show. I don't want to make you guys sit here while I plug my computer in. You know what? I'm going to do that.
Anyway, I forgot what I was saying. Let's look at the schedule. Let's look at really hash this out. Why don't we? I know we got Green Bay this week, and then we got the Pittsburgh Steelers on a Thursday night game. White out, short week the next week. Okay. And then after that, week eight, you got the Jets. That's at home. That's a win. You got the Bears. That's at home. That's a win. Should be, at least. Basically, down the stretch for Cincinnati, you got Green Bay this week. You got Pittsburgh the week after. You've got the New York Jets after that. You've got the Chicago Bears after that. If we can go, let's say we go 2-2 over that four-game stretch, that puts us, that puts the Bengals at 4-5. Okay? Then you got Pittsburgh, New England, Baltimore, Buffalo, Baltimore. And that's starting, look, December 14th, December 21st. That's when you're starting to get into Joe Burrow could be back territory. If we can be around 500 by, let's see, week 6, week 7, week 8, week 9, week 10, week 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, week 15, week 16. So how many more games is that? We've played 5 games. So we would have 10 games in the interim. If we can go 5-5 and be, shit, 7-8, ew. 7-8, but again, this AFC North is wide-ass open. The AFC in general is wide open. If we go into week 16 at 7-8 and Joe comes back and we're able to win those last two and squeak in at 9-8, right? I think that's what we did last year, and we didn't make it, but it was a little more contentious last year. Baltimore was playing good. They're not playing good this year. Buffalo, as much as some of you guys want to believe, I do think Buffalo has a great football team. They definitely showed some of their flaws against New England this past Sunday night. And I don't want to hang the judgment of a team off of one game, but I think Buffalo does have their flaws. I do. I'm not saying the Bengals are going to beat Buffalo in week, what, 17, 16, 15, 14, in week 13. But look, let's say, I want to share my screen with you guys, but it'll buffer. It won't be good. Let's say we win one of the games in the next 2 weeks. Joe Flacco's already beat the Packers. I don't know if they're the team that we thought they were through the first 2-3 weeks of the season. Or we have a gritty division battle against Pittsburgh and end up pulling that off at home on a Thursday night whiteout. We go 1-1. We're sitting at 3-4. And then you got the Jets. That's a win. Maybe you're sitting at 4-4. Maybe you beat the Bears at home. All of a sudden you're 5-4 going into the last 8 weeks of the year. And there's revitalized hope. I think this Ravens defense is so bad, we could maybe sweep them. That's another 2 wins. That puts you at 7 wins. And then you got a weak Dolphins team late in the year. You got a weak Cardinals team late in the year. And you got a Browns team that's very beatable on the last week of the season. Now, call me delusional, but if I'm not incorrect, I think I just tallied up 10 wins. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm just spitting some hypotheticals and some quick math. The Bengals should beat the Jets. The Bengals should beat the Bears. The Bengals should beat the Ravens at least 1 out of 2 times. If not both, the Ravens are that bad to me. The Bengals should beat the Dolphins. The Bengals should beat the Cardinals. And they should beat the Browns again. So 1, 2, 3. Let's be conservative and just take 1 out of 2 Ravens wins. 4, 5, 6. So already you're at 8 wins. And that's if you get swept by the Steelers. That's if you lose to the New England Patriots at home.
And that's if you don't sweep a Ravens team that's already bad. So looking at the schedule, I got a bit of optimism. Jacob, I don't know, man. I mean, the Bears could come in and beat them in Cincinnati. We've got to see what this team looks like on Sunday. I'm not going to be happy if the Bengals lose against Green Bay on Sunday, but if this offense at least has a little bit of life and makes this more exciting, I'm going to have some optimism. I don't think it's likely that the ball's kicked on Sunday and it's just the same vibes for Cincinnati as it's been the last 3 weeks. I really don't, objectively, bias aside, I do not believe that will be the case. So again, I think the main points that I'm trying to make here objectively are, number one, the AFC is wide open, and subsequently the AFC North is wide ass open, probably the widest ass open division in football right now, with Baltimore being as bad as they are, and with Cincinnati being as bad as we've been. And then you look at the Bengals schedule. I don't see it as a bone crushing schedule. And maybe that's because the quality of the game, the quality of the teams this year are not up to par with some of the teams we've seen in recent years. The Chiefs are obviously fallible. I think the Chiefs are at risk to miss the playoffs. The Bills, we saw them go down on Sunday. I think there's flaws there. They're probably the best team in the AFC top to bottom right now. And then you got Pittsburgh. I mean, Mike Tomlin might be one of the greatest coaches of all time. Dude, shut up, Jacob. We got Jacob in the chat saying that the Bears-Bengals is the freest win for the Bears. Come on, dude. Give us a little bit of... I mean, I know we haven't earned it the last 3 weeks, but now we got Flacco. We got one of the most elite quarterbacks ever. I gotta pull that clip of Trump where he's saying that Joe Flacco is elite. Twitter would love that, huh? My Bengals people on Twitter. Okay. Yeah, I clocked it. We spent about an hour talking about Joe Flacco and the Chiefs-Jags game last night. I think the Jags are still at 4-1 at risk to miss the playoffs. I really do. But Trevor Lawrence looks like Trevor Jackson running around out there last night. He was running the football, leading rusher for his team. Mahomes the same. Okay, my sound pad's broken, so I don't get any outro song today. But holler at me on the Madden stream. I'm sweating balls a little bit, so I'm going to check on my AC real quick, upload the audio version of this podcast. And if you popped in late, if you're watching this and you're not subbed to the channel, really appreciate you tuning in. Let me just take that inch and turn it into a mile and ask you to go ahead and subscribe to the channel for me as the fastest growing football channel in the land. We got Madden streams. We got daily clips. We got daily podcasts that you're watching right now. And if you popped in late, you can hop right over to the channel, wherever the hell the button is. Maybe it's down there. You can hop right into the channel and watch the replay of this if you want to, if that's the way you consume your podcast. Also, if you got your girlfriend in the car and you want to force her to learn a little ball, we are on every single audio platform that you can think of, literally. Updated daily, new episodes go in Monday through Friday. Don't miss it. We're always live around 6:30 Eastern. So continue to show out. Appreciate everybody popping in. And that's the episode. Like I said, I don't have any. You guys hear that? That's my outro music. It's terrible. All right. Anyways, love you guys. Hey, we'll be back tomorrow to chat some more shit.